Netanyahu charged with war crimes.
And what it means is that both Netanyahu and Gallant would be liable for arrest if they traveled to any of the more than 120 countries that are party to the ICC.
Russia unleashes a new missile on Ukraine.
Russia's new Oreshnik, non-nuclear hypersonic ballistic missile.
And Donald Trump's pick to be attorney general is out.
Gates was being investigated by the House Ethics Committee for various criminal allegations.
Today is Friday, November 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. We start today in Europe. That's where the International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his former defense chief Yoav Gallant, and Hamas leader Ibrahim El-Masri, all for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. For more, I'm joined by VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
So far, it's Netanyahu and his former defense minister, Yoav Gallant, who he actually fired a few weeks ago. And they're accused of war crimes and even crimes against humanity, of using starvation and other, you know, about Israel's conduct in Gaza. And it says it's the first time the ICC has ever issued warrants against leaders of a democratic country. It says that there is a series of charges of crimes against humanity and war crimes, including using starvation as a tool of war. And what it means is that both Netanyahu and Gallant would be liable for arrest if they traveled to any of the more than 120 countries that are party to the ICC. That includes France. It includes Canada. It does not include the United States, however.
Now, the Israelis weren't the only one named today. The ICC also singled out some Hamas leaders, correct?
Yes. Well, it had said that it was going to also charge Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar, who was killed by Israel. And it did also issue an arrest warrant against Mohammed Deif, another Hamas leader, who Israel says was killed in an airstrike in July. But Hamas has not confirmed that he was killed.
But clearly today, the big news is Netanyahu, the head of state of a democratically elected country, as you said, being accused of war crimes. Has he reacted publicly yet?
Well, his office, he hasn't reacted, but his office issued a statement accusing the ICC of anti-Semitism and comparing the ruling to the ruling against Dreyfus, who in the late 1890s was falsely accused of treason against France. And Israelis, both, you know, the public and officials are very angry. They say, you know, Hamas started this with an invasion on October 7th, 2023, when they, you know, thousands of Hamas gunmen came into Israel, killed civilians, women, children, babies. There are all kinds of horrible stories. Took 250 hostage. There are still 101 hostages being held. So what Israelis are saying is that if anyone should be accused of war crimes, it should be Hamas and not Israel.
But Hamas has been accused of war crimes, yes?
Yes, Hamas has. Hamas leaders have. But, you know, Hamas is not a democracy. And I think what Israelis feel is that you can't put what Israel, you know, was trying to do in terms of defending itself and trying to fight against Hamas after this onslaught in the same category as, you know, what Hamas did intentionally targeting civilians. I spoke to a former military prosecutor who said that in all her years in the army, she never heard of any order specifically against civilians and, you know, specifically saying that Israel should kill civilians, target civilians. And in fact, she said Israeli soldiers even put themselves at risk so as not to put civilians at risk. That said, I also saw tape from the former defense minister, Yoav Gallant, a few days after the Hamas attack on Israel, saying we will impose a siege on Gaza, no water, no electricity, no food. And then under pressure from the United States and the international community, Israel did allow international aid to reach Gaza.
It's VOA's Linda Gradstein reporting from Jerusalem. Linda, thanks very much for your time. Thanks for your reporting tonight.
Sure. Thank you, Steve.
As we've heard from Linda, Benjamin Netanyahu denounced the decision by the court, calling it anti-Semitic.
The decision to issue an arrest warrant against me, the democratically elected prime minister of the state of Israel, and our former defense minister, was made by a rogue prosecutor who's trying to extricate himself from sexual harassment charges, and by biased judges who are motivated by anti-Semitic sentiments against the one and only Jewish state.
But, he said, that won't deter Israel from defending itself against enemies who seek to destroy them. He later said that the court violates the natural right of democracies to defend themselves against terrorism. Meanwhile, in Washington, the White House also rejected the ICC's decision.
We remain deeply concerned by the prosecutor's rush to seek arrest warrants and the troubling process errors that led to this decision. The United States has been clear that the ICC does not have jurisdiction over this matter. You've heard us say this before. Whatever this prosecutor might imply, there is no evidence, none, between Israel and Hamas. There's just none.
That's White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. She later added that the U.S. was discussing next steps with its partners, including Israel.
Meanwhile, the fighting in Ukraine intensified on Thursday. Russia launched a new kind of ballistic missile as part of a larger attack on the city of Dnipro. This as Ukraine was marking the Day of Dignity and Freedom. For VOA, Anna Chernikova reports from Kyiv.
In the early hours of Thursday, the Ukrainian Air Force reported that the Russian army launched an intercontinental ballistic missile from the Astrakhan region of Russia, 800 kilometers from the Ukrainian border. Soon after the launch, a large explosion was reported in the city of Dnipro. A day before, on Wednesday, the U.S. and some European countries closed their embassies in Kyiv because of a specific warning of imminent massive shelling. This was seen as a hint that something extraordinary might happen, considering that the embassies were not locked down previously. Later, President Zelensky confirmed that Russia had used its new missile.
Сьогодні була нова російська ракета. Всі характеристики...
He mentioned швидкість, висота міжконтинентальної балістичної.
Зараз тривають експертизи. Очевидно, що Путін використовує Україну як полігон.
Later in the evening, President Putin made a statement confirming the use of Western-made missiles by the Ukrainian armed forces on Russian territory. Putin said Ukraine hit targets in the Kursk and Bryansk regions with six ATACMS missiles on November 19th and Storm Shadow missiles on November 21st. Putin also confirmed that on Thursday Russia attacked the city of Dnipro with a medium-range ballistic missile equipped with a non-nuclear hypersonic weapon, Russian state media reported. According to the Russian president, it was an Oreshnik missile, and it was a test launch of what they called the newest missile.
Мы считаем себя вправе применять наше оружие против военных объектов тех стран, которые позволяют применять свое оружие против наших объектов. А в случае эскалации агрессивных действий будем отвечать также решительно и зеркально.
And threatened Ukraine's allies with a response. Ukrainian officials did not confirm what was the main target of the attack. However, it was reported that Ukrainian air defense shot down six of the seven cruise missiles also used by the Russian forces to attack a medical institution, businesses, and critical infrastructure of Dnipro. A rehabilitation center for people with disabilities in Dnipro was also damaged as a result of the attack, local authorities reported. Fortunately, though, no casualties or wounded were reported. Meanwhile, Ukraine marks the Day of Dignity and Freedom. President Zelensky said in his address to the nation that today Ukraine's insane neighbor has once again shown what they truly are and how they despise dignity, freedom, and human life itself. And how terrified they are.
Сьогодні ж наш божевільний сусід вкотре показав, який він насправді, як він зневажає і гідність, і свободу, і взагалі життя людей, і як він боїться.
And to those who gave their lives for Ukraine's freedom. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
For more on the Russian missile attack and the recent developments in the Russia-Ukraine war, Steve spoke with Angelica Evans with the Institute for the Study of War.
So the Russians launched this missile early this morning and struck Dnipro City in eastern Ukraine. The Ukrainians, of course, thought it was an intercontinental ballistic missile based on the characteristics, kind of the speed that it was traveling at and what it looked like. But we did get Western officials saying that this was more likely a shorter range ballistic missile. And then later today, of course, we got a briefing from Russian President Vladimir Putin calling this Russia's new Oreshnik, non-nuclear hypersonic ballistic missile. He gave us a few details kind of about how fast this missile can travel. It doesn't really seem, honestly, that different from the other ballistic missiles of this type that Russia has. And based on the damage that it was able to do to Dnipro City today, which was pretty consistent with other kinds of Russian missiles that we often see striking this area, at least in its non-nuclear capabilities, it doesn't seem significantly more powerful than the other ballistic missiles that Russia already has on deck.
So that was my next question, really, is what does this change, if anything, for the war?
We see the Russians have missiles, you know, similar to this, missiles that are, have even greater payloads than this one, already striking into Ukraine, already conducting strikes regularly against Kyiv City, Dnipro City, and other areas of Ukraine. So on a strategic level, the kind of unveiling of this new missile doesn't really represent any significant shift in Russia's capabilities.
So more of a PR move.
Exactly. That's kind of how we're looking at it anyway. You know, particularly Putin's rhetoric and threats about this missile's ability to strike into Europe. It very much seems kind of like angling and trying to really influence this wider conversation that we're still having, you know, about Western support for Ukraine from the U.S., from European allies, and even this recent conversation about Ukraine's ability to use Western-provided weapons to strike into Russia itself.
Have there been any specific actions, any specific strikes by Ukraine on Russian territory?
Yeah, so in the last few days, you know, we've seen the Ukrainians strike an ammunition depot in Bryansk, and of course that storm's shadow strike into Kursk. But even, you know, before Biden okayed and kind of greenlit these strikes, we've seen the Ukrainians be able to do really impressive things, you know, with their own long-range drone capabilities. So back in September and earlier this summer, they struck several Russian ammunition depots that were, you know, housing thousands and thousands of rounds of artillery, a lot of missiles. We've seen them strike shellhead production and storage facilities. I mean, these kinds of strikes can actually have quite a large scale impact on Russia's ability to shell Ukrainian frontline positions and conduct these large scale drone strikes into Ukraine itself. Shelling is a huge deal in Russia's kind of theory of victory of how they plan, you know, to keep advancing in Ukraine indefinitely. A huge part of that is their infantry isn't incredibly well trained, and so they really rely on the ability to really intensively shell frontline positions so that even their poorly trained artillery can advance into these Ukrainian positions. And so, you know, compromising that ability is really critical for Ukraine.
Angelica Evans is a Russia researcher with the Institute for the Study of War. Ms. Evans, thanks for your time. Thanks for your analysis tonight.
Thank you so much.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world.
The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan says he doesn't see enough political appetite from the warring parties to reach a resolution to the conflict that has left tens of thousands dead, forced millions from their homes, and left a large swath of the population to starve.
A new potential deal reached at United Nations climate talks on money for developing countries to transition to clean energy and adapt to climate change left out a crucial sticking point. Exactly how much wealthy nations will pay. Negotiators at the talks, known as COP29 in Baku, Azerbaijan, are trying to close the gap between the $1.3 trillion the developing world says is needed and the few hundred billion that richer nations are prepared to pay.
Senegal's ruling party has secured a resounding victory in the country's legislative elections, winning 130 of 165 seats. This, according to provisional results announced Thursday by the National Vote Counting Commission. The win gives newly elected president Bassirou Diomaye Faye a clear mandate to carry out ambitious reforms promised during the campaign. The main opposition coalition, led by the former president Macky Sall, won 16 seats.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strobe. It's another tumultuous day in American politics. President-elect Donald Trump's nominee for Attorney General, former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, withdrew himself from consideration for the job on Thursday. Gaetz was facing a tough confirmation process due to criminal allegations that included sex with underage girls and illegal drug use, as VOA's congressional correspondent Katherine Gibson reports.
A close ally of President-elect Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is unstoppable.
Former Republican Representative Matt Gaetz on Thursday withdrew from consideration to become Attorney General of the United States. Gaetz was being investigated by the House Ethics Committee for various criminal allegations. He has denied those claims, but many U.S. lawmakers were concerned about his fitness to lead the Department of Justice. Democratic Senator Chris Coons.
Congressman Gaetz, who I do not know personally, certainly has a reputation as a fierce advocate for President Trump, but also has been the subject of credible allegations of significant severe misconduct.
A four-term congressman and member of the House Armed Services Committee, Gaetz challenged the leadership of then-Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy, over what he considered excessive government spending.
Real chaos is when the American people have to go through the austerity that is coming if we continue to have $2 trillion annual deficits.
Tech billionaire Elon Musk praised Gaetz earlier this week. The owner of the social platform X said Gaetz will be, quote, our hammer of justice. But many senators, including Republicans, expressed reluctance to confirm him without more information about those allegations. Claire Finkelstein is a law professor at the University of Pennsylvania.
It's profoundly problematic to have the highest law enforcement position in the United States occupied by someone who has arguably committed significant crimes. And though he has not been charged with a crime, it is important nonetheless for the Senate to consider his conduct from the standpoint of both ethics and legality, whether the conduct was ever formally charged or not.
Gaetz resigned from the current Congress after being nominated for Attorney General. Katherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
In a late-breaking development, President-elect Donald Trump named Pam Bondi, the former Attorney General of Florida, to replace Matt Gaetz as his nominee for U.S. Attorney General. Bondi is a longtime Trump ally and was one of his lawyers during his first impeachment trial when he was accused, but not convicted, of abusing his power as he tried to condition U.S. military assistance to Ukraine on that country investigating then-former Vice President Joe Biden. For more, visit voanews.com.
In other presidential transition news, Donald Trump says on social media that his pick for border czar will be in charge of all deportations of illegal aliens back to their country of origin. VOA's Veronica Villafañe reports on Trump's pick, Tom Homan.
Donald Trump's choice for border czar has worked for more than 30 years in federal immigration control. Tom Homan told this year's Republican National Convention that every president has said he would secure the border, but only Trump did it.
He created the most secure border in our history, and that's a stone cold fact. The data proves it, and guess what? He's going to do it again.
On the campaign trail, Trump promised mass deportations of undocumented immigrants.
Immediately upon taking the oath of office, I will launch the largest deportation program in American history.
Though experts note that migration and crime rates are not linked, Homan says deportations will fix what he calls the immigration mistakes of Joe Biden's presidency.
President Trump is going to end the Biden-Harris open border madness. We will stop the drugs and the crime from pouring in your neighborhoods.
Homan was acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement in the first Trump administration, where he led a 40% increase in deportation arrests.
Overall removals are down.
because the border is under better control than it has been in 45 years.
Illegal immigration was a major issue for many voters in this year's election. Political analyst Francisco Rodriguez says Homan has a zero-tolerance approach.
So if you are a criminal here and have a child or family here, Homan has stated that you can live with your children, with your spouse. No one is saying the family will be separated.
Former Florida state legislator Daisy Baez says Trump's intention to nominate Homan is a warning for the immigrant community.
If you're not a citizen or a permanent resident, you have no guarantee of staying in this country. It's very likely you'll be on the list of those eligible for deportation.
I got a message to the millions of illegal aliens that Joe Biden's releasing our country in violation of federal law. You better start packing now.
Homan is a former New York police officer who contributed to Project 2025, a set of policy proposals published by the Conservative Heritage Foundation Research Group to, quote, rescue the country from the grip of the radical left. Veronica Villafañe for VOA News.
And finally today, in Niger, where press freedom faces challenges, journalist Samira Sabou has become a symbol of resistance. The investigative journalist and activist is being recognized with an International Press Freedom Award. Reporter Abdul Razak Idrissa met with Sabou in the capital, Niamey. VOA's Salem Solomon has the story.
In Niger, speaking truth to power often comes at a high cost. For journalist Samira Sabou, that cost includes legal harassment, imprisonment, and threats. But she says she remains undeterred. Sabou is best known for her investigative reporting on governance and corruption, topics that have made her a target in a politically charged environment. But she says free press in the country is more important than ever.
Libre n'est pas importante que pour le Niger.
A free press is not only important for Niger, but it is also important today for a country that lives to the rhythm of globalization to have a free press open to the world.
Sabou publishes on Facebook and is the president of the Association of Bloggers for Active Citizenship. In the past, she has written for other publications, and her hard-hitting investigative work has resulted in her arrest and appearing before court. She says she believes that the media should continue its watchdog role in her country.
This allows precisely the leaders and those who have been entrusted with public affairs to know precisely that there is a certain accountability. We need a counterbalance to power, and the press can be this counterbalance.
Her fight is not just in the field, but also online. Through social media, she engages with her audience and raises awareness about freedom of expression. But the digital space, she says, is also where much of her legal battles originate due to the country's cybercrime laws. Sabou has been sentenced under Niger's cybercrime law and her appeal is pending.
What I felt, of course, was injustice. Apart from injustice, I also told myself that there is improvement to be made at the level of our judicial system, where, through this detention, I understood that it is more of a punitive system than a correctional system.
The country experienced a coup d'etat in 2023 when the Presidential Guard detained democratically elected President Mohamed Bazoum and a group of officers took control of the country. Military rule, Sabou says, brings its own sets of challenges to the media.
When someone says coup d'etat, they also are saying there shouldn't be certain regulatory institutions of the profession of journalists or of institutions of monitoring human rights. So, all these institutions no longer exist. I think that already calls into question the work that we do because precisely we no longer have protection.
Despite these challenges, Sabou's work has earned her international recognition. The Committee to Protect Journalists honored her as one of this year's International Press Freedom Award recipients, highlighting her courage and commitment to free speech. With this year's award, she says she hopes to inspire other journalists and make a lasting impact to change restrictive laws.
We intend to work to improve the framework of freedom of the press and work with women, young people, institutions of the Republic as well to allow that the exercise of the profession of journalism and other professions like online content creators can be valued and respected by our state.
Sabu says she expects to face more challenges, especially in regions where freedom of expression is curtailed. But she says her work has purpose. Salem Solomon, VOA News.
And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.